Local news can come at you fast. Want the latest on what's happening in your backyard? Download the free Odyssey app. Follow your local news station, and you'll get alerts on the top stories making headlines in your city. You can stay in the know, no matter what you're up to, and be among the first to find out when news breaks. Plus, keep tabs on weather and traffic, so you're never caught off guard. To get started, download the Odyssey app. That's A-U-D-A-C-Y. And follow your local news station.
Here to ring the opening bell on this Thursday, January 9th, Booker T and the MGs. I got a new slogan for 2025, and it is this. It is, back off and butt out. And if you're worried about something this morning and you're all consumed with worry, let me ask you this, bruh. Can you do anything about it? Because if not, you're just spinning your wheels. You're jogging in place. You're burning up energy, but you're not burning off any calories. All you're doing is maybe leading to stress eating. So think about that. Think about back off and butt out. If you can't do anything about it, why worry about it? Take a break. We come back. We'll talk about terrorism and veterans and more here on WWL. 6:12 now, Thursday morning, January 9th. Could be another chilly day. Not quite as cold. Highs of 52. Cold start, though, 33 degrees right now. If you average the temperatures in the area tomorrow, rainy, 90% chance for showers, highs of 62 in advance of another cold front. Knocks the highs down to 49 on Saturday, partly cloudy, 58 on Sunday, and then we're in the 50s all the way through next week. So early January weather indeed. David Schanzer joins us now, our friend, director of the Triangle Center and on terrorism and homeland security at Duke University. Good morning, David. How are you?
Good morning, Tommy. Good to talk to you.
As the audience well knows, I have my own theory on my own rules as it goes to this. So Happy New Year. I tell people Happy New Year for the first month if I haven't spoken to them.
All right. Well, Happy New Year to you.
Let's talk about radicalization of service members and how common that is. And I guess we'll start with the Bourbon Street attack here. Shamsuddin Jabbar. Matthew Livelsberger, who drove the Tesla Cybertruck packed with explosives and blew it up in front of the Trump International Hotel. Both radicals, but in a different way, right? The message was different?
Well, absolutely, Tommy. And before we dive into this, I just want to say, I'm going to try to answer your questions the best we can, but these are theories. And I want people to understand that the things we don't know about terrorism are far greater than what we actually know for sure. I think after an event like happened in New Orleans, everybody's searching for answers. Why, what do we know? And terrorism is really hard to study. Most of the people who commit it end up are dead or in jail and not accessible to researchers and so on. So we have some theories about why people radicalize and what this process is about. But people should understand these are just theories, and humans are very fickle and hard to study, and they do things for reasons that are not always understandable. But let me dive into both of these cases and service members. And this is my theory. You kind of try to think about the folks who are attracted to coming into the military. And this is the way the military markets itself and tries to recruit people as well. You know, they want to be part of something that's bigger than themselves, be all that you can be, and so on. And, for some reason, they might lose interest in that particular ideology of the military, but they're still that kind of person. They still might be vulnerable to this idea of, hey, I want to do something in my life that makes a difference, that says something. I want to be part of an idea that is bigger than myself. And that might be at least with some of the members of our military who end up engaging in terrorism later on in their life after they leave or so on. That might be why they radicalize.
You know, that really resonates with me because I was watching the coverage of former President Jimmy Carter's funeral, and Bob Schieffer, who is a longtime veteran, said that the importance of military service to him, and he was talking about President Carter's military service, was exactly what you said, that he felt that he was a part of something that was much bigger than himself. And that's why he thought military service was so important. And that's maybe we got away from it in this country. And that's a conversation for a different day. But that really did just click with me just now as you said that, that having never been in the military, that you're part of something bigger than yourself. So would the theory be that perhaps there's when a member, a service member separates from the military, in some cases, there's a vacuum of feeling a part of something bigger than yourself, and that's why maybe they would go toward one cause or the other?
Well, yeah, I think we have to say the obvious at the beginning is that we have a huge military, and this happens to, much, much less than 1% of our whole service members. So I think that has to be said up front. But we do have it is disproportionate in the number of people who engage in this. We do see a disproportionate number of people who have some form of military service in their background. So, I just think that's a possibility. There's this, they have this personality type, and obviously, you have to have something in your life where you've become disenchanted with the things that brought you to military service in the first place, and you've rejected that ideology, but you're vulnerable and you're searching for something else. And I'd say another issue, of course, is many of our service members have served in Afghanistan, served in Iraq, and not all of them had positive experiences to any regard, and they might have been very critical of the experience they had, what they saw. And we could have a big debate about the Iraq and Afghanistan wars, which we don't have time for. But of course, being on the ground, experiencing it on a day-to-day basis, we've all seen many, many movies and so on about the range of experiences people have. They could have decided that the United States was in the wrong in these conflicts and be attracted to the ideology that is highly critical of the United States and American values and so on. And that's, the ideology that of ISIS and Al-Qaeda and the New Orleans perpetrator latched onto.
So there's a commonality with Shamsuddin Jabbar and Matthew Livelsberger in that they both served at the same base. I don't think it was at the same time, but one was doing it under the auspices of ISIS. The other one was just the opposite. He was said that he wrote a note saying, first of all, Shamsuddin Jabbar was a veteran, Matthew Livelsberger, an active duty member. He said that the explosion was meant to serve as a wake-up call and that the country was terminally ill and headed toward collapse. So I don't understand how, and we can take a break and pick it up when we come back, and again, I'm asking you to go into somebody's mind that is, I don't think, thinking rationally and trying to explain the action, trying to rationally explain the actions of somebody irrational, which is not easy to do. But I just wonder why, in both cases, they would decide to express their views in the way that they did. And that goes to the basic nature of terrorism. I don't know if, when it comes to terrorism, obviously the New Orleans attacker was trying to kill people. Matthew Livelsberger, I don't think, was attempting to kill anybody but himself. We'll talk about it more when we come back with our friend David Chanzer, trying to make sense of nonsense, I guess. Director of the Triangle Center on Terrorism and Homeland Security at Duke University, 620. Traffic now, WWL. 625, Tommy Tucker, WWL, back with David Chanzer, our friend, director of the Triangle Center on Terrorism and Homeland Security at Duke University, talking about extremism with veterans and military members. David, I remember when the U.S. was gearing up to go into Kuwait. It was January before the invasion, late December before the invasion started, and I saw some Marines, big, giant people bench pressing, looking mean as ever, and they were frightening, and I thought, well, you know what? That's what a soldier's supposed to be. And I say that because when it comes to the military, and I don't mean this in a negative way, that's what the military does. They train you to kill people, right? So I guess when it comes to former service members that become radicalized, they're very good at what they do. Accurate?
Well, you know, it's interesting. Jabbar, you know, he didn't have the kind of job he did in the military was not what the kind that you just described.
But at some point, they're all soldiers,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, they get the training, and they're in that environment, and they have everybody has a minimum level of capabilities. You know, with the Las Vegas perpetrator you were talking about before the break, I mean, what I said at the beginning about how difficult and how fraught it is to, you know, explain and try to attribute these various kinds of actions to certain ideas that we can make sense of, I say that's an even more difficult case. I believe I was on your radio station when I was thinking that it was possible because of the symbolism that this individual might have been a critic of Trump and Musk coming to power in the next couple of weeks. And it turned out it was just the opposite. Mm-hmm. Terrorism is often a symbolic act, and I think it fits with what happened in New Orleans, New Year's Eve, drinking, a bar, and so on. And that's certainly something that's very symbolic to somebody who believes in the ISIS ideology. But you have to ask yourself, if somebody thinks that Trump and Musk are going to help change the world in a direction he actually would favor, why would he blow up a Musk car and
right in front of a Trump hotel? Yeah.
Yes.
And I would ask, does it, when it comes to extremism, does it skew to one side or the other, either radical Islam or far-right extremism?
Well, it depends where you are and what country and what time of what period you're talking about. But here in the United States, certainly in the years after 9/11, and especially when ISIS was popular, and successful in holding territory and so on, we were seeing many, many more acts of violence inspired by the al-Qaeda ISIS ideology than we were others. But that peaked and waned and really went down to close to zero when this happened in New Orleans. So the one question is ISIS resurging? We have to be on the lookout for that. In other periods in recent decades, we've seen a big resurgence in right-wing radicalization, acts of violence, terrorism committed. Of course, I'd say the peak, of course, of that was the January 6th attack on the Capitol, very controversial. But, of course, those were acts of violence for a political purpose, so I would categorize them as terrorism as well. Another unsatisfying academic answer, yes and no, it depends.
Any way for the military or government can predict anything? Because everybody always wants to say, why didn't you know this? Why can it be stopped? But when you live in a free society, I mean, yeah, is there anything government can do?
Well, sure. I mean, we can look. I think another thing we have to mention, especially with the Las Vegas incident, is we have a lot of service members who were veterans, and they're suffering from some form of trauma from their experience, and trauma can lead you to do all kinds of things and be very confused. And that doesn't necessarily have to do with politics, even if some of what they said or the notes they left have some political intonation. So lots of what happens with these individuals could be because of a sickness, a mental sickness, or some other type of ailment. So, I don't think we're going to get the kinds of answers that we would like to have for either of these two incidents.
Thank you, David. Appreciate your time. Insights, as always, David Chanza, director of the Triangle Center on Terrorism and Homeland Security at Duke University. We'll take a break. Come back Thursday morning. We'll talk with Mike Strain, Commissioner of Louisiana Department of Agriculture and Forestry. Time now, WWL First News. For that, we go to Eno's Inn. 6:43, 17 till 7. Tommy Tucker, WWL Thursday morning, January 9th. In the last couple of minutes, the sunrise has gotten even more beautiful with some pink matching in with the gray clouds and highlighting the pink on the Crescent City Connection. Beautiful morning in southeastern Louisiana. And Mike Strain, Commissioner of Louisiana Department of Agriculture and Forestry, joins us now. How you doing, Mike?
I am doing very, very well. How are you?
I am okay, sir. Happy New Year to you. I think I told you that
Happy
last week.
Happy New Year.
Or maybe I didn't. Anyway, hey, let's talk about... I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
No. Mike sent me a Christmas card, which was very nice of him, with a picture of Hootie on it. Hootie's the newest member of the Strain family, who is a basset hound. How's Hootie doing, Mike?
Man, Hootie is doing great. Now, Hootie doesn't like cold weather, so, you know, when we light the fire, she don't want to get off the couch. But every day, is, as we say, is hooterific. So
hooterific.
She goes to work with my wife every day. She's the official greeter at the veterinary hospital. You know, people come in, and Hootie's so glad to see them, and they're so glad to see Hootie. And when she comes home at night after a hard day of, you know, of licking and getting petted, you know, she needs her rest. So she's had a great time, a great Christmas. And I tell you, she's a really, really a very unique animal.
Mike,
but she doesn't know she's an animal. We never told her she's an animal.
No.
You know. No.
She wouldn't believe you anyway.
She's just a different kind of person.
She wouldn't believe you anyway. So you talked about the cold weather and covering your plants. Hootie has had a story with covering plants.
Yes. So, you know, we're getting ready for the freeze, and, you know, I wrap the pipes, and, of course, Hootie loves to, as you set something down, run off with it. So my wife is wrapping up her plants, and Hootie thinks that's the greatest thing in the world. You know, all these sheets on top of all these ornamental plants just for her to pull off and run across the yard with. So, yeah, and it didn't help that I'm laughing watching all this. So Susan would put it on, turn around, and Hootie grabbed the sheet and pull it and run. It's all a game until she finally got tired and left the sheets alone. Yes.
She puts them on, Hootie takes them off. Puts them on, Hootie takes them off.
Hootie takes them off. But the thing with this, you know, with the cold weather snaps, you know, as you put those sheets on to protect your plants, really there's a method behind it, you know, that you could buy commercial bags, but you can use sheets as well. And you drape the plant, and then at the base of the plant, you kind of, you know, move the soil away from the base a little bit and make a ring to where you want natural earth exposed to the stem to where it can go up into the canopy. And then once you put that sheet on, once it warms up, you know, once you get up there 37 to 40 degrees, you need to go ahead and take that sheet off if you can. Whatever you do, don't leave it. And then when we get into 65 degrees and those sheets are still on there and they'll be full of moisture, then that can, at the end of the day, damage the plants. There's some care there. And you can, if you have a light bulb, you know, you can put a light bulb there, you know, with the extension cord. But again, you need to check all of your cords and your heaters. One of the things last night, and we have a greenhouse and had an electric heater in it, and the heater was plugged in. And from just the intensity of the electric heater, the plug-in actually melted and fused into the electrical socket. Mm. And so, yeah, and I'm thinking, oh my God, you know, my wife, I said, please tell me you didn't pull that out with your hands, that you used a pair of pliers.
Yeah.
I said, no, you know, I used an insulated tool and pulled that plug out. But that's some of the things that can happen if you really pull in a lot of electricity, especially with space heaters.
Oh, yeah.
And so those you have to be careful, and careful with those extension cords. Two reasons. One, we watch to make sure that, you know, animals such as Hootie don't chew the extension cords, right, when they're hot. Mm-hmm. And two, you can't cover them up. You've got to leave those extension cords on the top of any surface. You know, don't put them under the rug, as we say, because again, that will cause a fire.
Mike, let's talk about, speaking of fire, these fires in California. I was saying earlier, of all the natural disasters, I don't know that anything terrifies me more than a forest fire and these fire natos and everything else. Talk about what's going on in California, and have you been contacted at all with for advice or anything?
We are, through our Forest Service, we're in contact with the National Forest Service. We stand ready. If they pull the trigger and say, you know, we need additional personnel, they will activate the compact, and we will respond. We will send persons. If they need people, aircraft, equipment, we will send it there. And so they have those teams, just as they responded when we called them. We had the red team, the gold team, you know, the green team, and the blue team. And we were in trouble, you know, in 2023. So far, 26,000, about 900, almost 27,000 acres as of last night had burned, and it started off with a 700-acre fire. But what's pushing it, it's very, very dry there, and you have you know, the Santa Ana winds. So think about it. Hurricane force winds pushing a fire where it's dry. Mm. We had our fires, you know, at the end of the day, the fires that we had, the biggest fire we were able to contain, and that was last year, and that one ended up being about 36,000 acres. We fought that for almost 6 weeks. We had it under, you know, under control within about a week, but it was not totally contained, and it was totally out. And yesterday, with these particular fires and those winds, there was zero control. They could not get it contained or controlled. They couldn't get aircraft in the air because you can't fly any type of aircraft into a 100-mile-an-hour wind. Yeah. Helicopters, you know, you can't, just doesn't work. And so think about it. You're out there fighting these fires, and that fire is running over your head in a 90-mile-an-hour fire. That's 90 miles an hour wind. I've been in fires with 20 and 25-mile-an-hour winds where those fires could run at 4 to 6 miles an hour. So think about that. A fire that can get over your head and run 4 to 6 miles in an hour. I fought fires in the head of tropical storms, but never anything with 100-mile-an-hour winds.
It's like a hurricane of fire, I guess is what it is. All right, Mike, let's take a break. We'll pick it up here when we come back. I want to ask you when we come back, too, about does California have any risk of the underground fire like we had when we had these things that were burning and we couldn't put out? 6:50, 10 till 7, traffic now, WWL. 6:53, 7 till 7, quickly back to Mike Strain, Commissioner of Louisiana Department of Agriculture and Forestry. Mike, before the break, I asked you about the L.A. Fires, the California wildfires, and I was wondering if they had any underground things like we had going on here with that, where you had to go in with the digger, whatever you call them things, backhoes, and dig up and try to put the fire out there.
In Contra Costa County, around 2019, they had a fire that was over 10,000 acres, and that was a marsh. And so if you look, you know, at the California topography, now when you have mountain that goes right into the ocean, that may be less of an issue. But in and around San Francisco, San Francisco Bay, and other areas, you've got a lot of water there in California, and you do have wetlands. So wherever you have wetlands, when you have drought, and they are having a drought, then you can get those marsh fires. So yes, they have that. And for those particular fires, you know, you can put out the surface fire, but the fire underneath will continue to burn. Now it's burning so hot, you know, in these fires that are along the coastline, and they've been burning down a strip right along the coast, you know, where the homes are there, and anything underground, you know, I'm sure a lot of those areas were at some time, right, a coastal type of environment, and so they probably have peaked down below, and that once that catches, you got to dig it out or flood it and keep it flooded for quite a period of time, but it will continue to burn. It's simply putting the surface out won't do it. They've got a lot of buildings. A lot of people have lost their homes, you know, in these fires. And it's affected many residents, but it is jumping up. It is moving rapidly. And we really hope that, you know, they can either get some rainfall or some way to, quote, as we say, pinch this fire off, because it is really, really a big deal out there in California.
Mike, I've been saying this, and I'm not trying to be Debbie Downer or anything, but a lot of people like to decorate their Christmas trees from Mardi Gras, which is fine if it's an artificial tree. But if you got a real tree, you want to get that thing out your house, don't you?
Yes, you want to get it out. You know, we've taken ours out of our home. And as you said before, that thing will go up, quote, like a Roman candle. Mm-hmm. They will go up. They're very dry. I know some people say, well, you know, I'm still putting water in it. Touch those leaves. They'll break off in your hands, and they will burn just. It takes just very, very, very little bit. So, you know, you think about just a little bit of electrical short, just something causing it, you know, some type of anything that sets it. And when it burns, you know, if you've ever seen one burn, you realize how fast and how hot they burn, and they can set the house on fire. So if it's an artificial tree, absolutely. You know, have your Mardi Gras tree. But other than that, it's time to take it, get it out of the house, get it all cleaned up, and dispose of it properly. If you can put it, bring it to a recycling center. If there's one near you, do that. But if you do decide to burn it, please make sure you're not by any structure, and you're very, very careful, and realize this thing will go up rapidly. And you'll be very much shocked about how hot and how fast it can burn.
I think they should have a public service thing or something, like a safe burn somehow in January, to show people just how quickly these things go up. Because until you see,
you know, that would be a good thing for the fire departments to have a demonstration to show, you know. Maybe we need to do a video. That would be a very good idea, that we could do that and distribute it to get that out. And we've done that, you know, a number of times on frying turkeys. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of fire departments will do a "don't do this when you fry your turkey" video. And, you know, all you have to do is see it one time. Then you really understand, you know, the mechanisms by which you get that eruption of fire if things are done improperly. And especially, you know, right now with the cold snap, a lot of people are using space heaters.
Mm-hmm.
You got to be very careful with those because, one, they pull a lot of electricity. And you've got to put them in such a place where you don't set the house on fire from the space heater, or the carpets, the rugs, the couch, and that sort of thing. And the other thing we're telling everyone is that, you know, we're having freezing and then it's thawing out, freezing and thawing out. You need to do a walk around the house. See if you see any drips anywhere, or your barns or whatever, because, you know, when you have that freeze thaw, you know, wherever that water is leaking to, you know, but each day that is going to get worse. And then you've got to go ahead and get that water shut off and deal with that. So now's the time to be vigilant and do your walk arounds. You know, we're probably going to warm up, you know, over to the weekend now. In North Louisiana, we're currently starting to, the government's closing offices, you know, going in from probably noon or later today through Friday, because we are expecting maybe some snow and up to a quarter or a half an inch of ice. And that's going to be above I-20 predominantly. But if you're up in that area, please be careful, you know, because we are not, you know, we're not savvy in snow and ice when we're driving. So pay attention. The good news is it's not going to be here, because that would be, look, you remember last time it snowed, the neutral ground on the interstate was completely solid in cars that just, they, you know, they were out there and couldn't go any further. And our bridges, you know, we don't have stocks of salt for our bridges and everything. So if it does freeze over, when they say that bridge freezes before the road, I can tell you from experience, they're absolutely right. So then, you know, we need to be careful. And because, again, if you can stay home when you have icy and frozen roads, stay home. Get off the road.
We only got 30 seconds left. Tell me about crawfish season for next year, this year.
It's coming. I'm so excited. They're out there. They've been fishing the last few days. I'm talking to all my crawfish farmers. We've got good, you know, we've got good water now. We've got to be kind of pushed back, you know, for about a week because of the cold weather. But we are going to have an absolutely outstanding crawfish season. Those crawfish are growing, and I just can't wait. Now is the time. And remember, make sure you're buying fresh, local, certified Louisiana crawfish.
Thank you, Mike. Have a great week. We'll talk to you again next week. Mike Strang, Commissioner, Louisiana Department of Agriculture and Forestry. When we come back, talk about the economic forecast for Louisiana for 2025. And at 8 o'clock, we'll talk with Brian Adams, State Fire Marshal, about staying safe during this cold snap. A lot coming up. Stay with us.